But first of all, new legislation to give adopted people access to their birth information will be published next month, we're told. Anyway, let's find out more, because I'm joined by Marie Ryan O'Brien, who's the founder of Ahantis. Good morning, Marie. Good to talk to you again, and thanks for joining us on the programme. First of all, you might just remind listeners again as to your organisation, Ahantis, what it does, the Irish word for, I suppose, recognition, acknowledgement.
Yes, well, we've campaigned for the last number of years for the right to for adoptees to access their own information on health, heritage and history, and to that end we've worked with 20 councils around the country, passing motions supporting open access to information. We were behind the Repeal the Seal campaign, which had like over 100 and nearly 100,000 people signing our petition for the right for survivors to access their information. So we've also participated in the pre-legislative scrutiny stage with regard to the Institutional Burials Bill, and appeared twice before the committee on this bill, the Birth Information and Tracing Bill.
Okay, now this particular one, and we know how important it is, well, from a psychological perspective, everybody in life wants to know, you know, who was my mother, who was my father, or whatever else. Yeah. But also, yeah, as we mentioned on this programme, even just in the past week, the importance of adopted people knowing their birth data, because it's so important from a medical perspective.
Absolutely, yes, yes, vitally important.
So in terms, what exactly is upcoming, do we think?
Well, we're kind of sitting on our hands waiting for the legislation to be published. It's coming, I think the Minister said that he would have it before the Dáil on the second week of January. So we only have a short time to wait for it. The report by the Joint Rockers Committee was published last week, which made a number of recommendations. So to that end, we just really have to wait and see what the legislation includes. But there was the recommendation that this information session that had been mooted originally, where adoptees were obliged to attend and be informed of the privacy rights and so on, be done away with, and that just simply be an access to information.
Now, it'll allow people, adopted people, to access their records related to their own identity. But what's the small print, do you think, or what would you be afraid of? We're told it includes birth certificates, birth, early life, care and medical information and other items. But in the past, we've heard things like this that then gets sort of drowned practically by bureaucracy and the small print.
Yeah, well, it's not just that. I mean, we can work with that. We can try and, you know, lobby to iron out where there are grey areas as regards to legislation. But the pressing issue, I would feel, with regard to accessing information, as you'd be well aware with, of having spoken to many people about this over the last number of years, if not decades, it's continually coming up, is that when we actually do get the information, there is a lacuna of information as regards what's available. And in many instances, people have a perception that all of this information is held in a file somewhere. And in some cases, that is not the case, that what is there could be actually inaccurate. There could be false names given. There mightn't be data recorded accurately. So what we have to look at is actually putting in other supports in order to provide adoptees with the means to access this information. So, for example, if we're talking about health information, even like 30, 40 years ago, the amount of health data gathered or information data that was gathered mightn't be what we would consider necessary now if we go to our doctor and we have to give information. So it makes more sense then to couple this legislation with, say, enhanced screenings for adoptees, earlier entry to existing screening programs, in order to give them what they need, which is information about themselves and not necessarily information about everybody else. Mm.
And it's not just adopted people in this country, Marie, because I saw a recent report in the Irish Times by Mike Mylott. It's a couple of months back, in fact, a lot of months back, that up to 4,000 Irish children were sent abroad for adoption between the mid-1940s and early 1970s. Not the 2,000 that the department might have predicted 25 years ago. The Sacred Heart Nuns, who managed Shanross Abbey, which had Castle Pollard and Bessborough, we were speaking to Breda Murphy of the Tuam Babies Mother, Mothers and Baby Home Alliance there during the week on the programme. They sent 814 children overseas, but the Commission found details for 1,123 babies, a near 40% increase in regards. Now, we know the Commission report has been kind of discredited in a number of cases regarding some of the survivors not being happy with it. But as I said just at the outset of that, before giving out the stats, this concerns an awful lot of people abroad as well who were given away either legally or illegally from this country.
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, I think it's fair to say with regard to the Commission is that it's really only touched on a fraction of the overall issue. I mean, when you mentioned Sean Rathabi and Castle Pollard and so on, it's interesting to note that the Commission within its remit took in, say, Sean Rathabi, it took in the home of Castle Pollard, but it would have ignored baby homes, for example, Stamullen, wouldn't have been included within the remit, which really is, it's part of the same, you know, truck system. Mm. So what we really need to do is start looking at this as a holistic, you know, issue, as opposed to just a piecemeal one, which is what has happened in the past. They look at one home, but ignore all the other, you know, minor homes that would have been as a result of it, like who were linked to it.
In fact, I understand from the report, and I read it at the time, only four county homes out of you know, a couple of dozen county homes in the company in the country were actually reflected in that report. So, as you say, many other stats. So, anyway, at least Marie, we'll wait and hope for developments on that in mid January. And with your permission, we'll come back to you again.
That would be great. Always a pleasure.
When that emerges, likewise, happy Christmas to you and yours.
Thank you. God bless.
And thank you for your ongoing work on behalf of so many people. Can you just imagine? I said this when Breda Murphy was on with me earlier this week, on Monday, in fact. Can you just imagine not knowing who your birth mother and birth father were, and spending your whole life wondering about these things, which is so crucial? So hopefully we'll have resolution to that in mid-January. That's Marie Ryan O'Brien, who's founder of one of those groups, Ahandas. Thank you again, Marie. Have a nice Christmas and good morning to you. Also coming up shortly, we'll be speaking with Celine Quandley about the Gold Miles that will be taking place around the country on Christmas Day. We'll have our Stephen's Day. We'll also have some more Christmas music. And keep your messages coming. You know the numbers by now. Clem and all the team, Merry Christmas from all at Spy Ireland in Strafford. Because it sounds very CIA-like in regards to that. Shannon says, I would love to hear your team's take on this piece of tech, a COVID pass that gets under the skin. Don't have time, I'm afraid, to look at that at the moment. We're up the walls busy. Happy Christmas, Clem, and all at KFM from a regular listener. Always enjoy the show. Thank you. I just finished Catherine Corliss's book, Belonging. A real eye-opener, says Tom T. That's Catherine Corliss, of course, who first revealed the scale of the number of babies that were buried in Tuam and so forth. I want to say hello to Michael Farrington in Blessington. Michael was on yesterday. Michael is 79, he tells us, but that didn't stop him writing a little message called Christmas Time Has, and it goes like this. Christmas time has come again. Bright lights are shining everywhere. Cards and presents are exchanged. Holly and ivy are arranged. Santa will come with long beard white to bring the toys on this great night. In the early morning beam, little children will be seen playing with their toys in glee all around the Christmas tree. Happy Christmas, and I will say to you all on this great day. A retired musician, Michael describes himself. Michael, fair play to you. Still going strong at 79. And you called that in yesterday, and Quiva and our news team went to the trouble of indeed taking it down again in regards to that. Now, apologies about that line, but I'll just try and see. Celine Quandley, are you there?
I am indeed, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Celine. Now, you're part of the Goal Network, Celine, and Stephen's Day is always a big, big day for Goal, particularly from a fundraising perspective.
Absolutely, yes, Tim. I have the pleasure of working with people in Goal there for the last 3 years now. And basically, the idea of Goal is to bring communities together and support some of the most vulnerable people across the world. So, yes, out in Allenwood, we've been involved for 3 years, but Goal Mile has been going on through. There's actually 150 Goal Miles happening in 28 counties across Ireland this Christmas. They'll take place either on Christmas Day or on St. Stephen's Day. It depends on the location. 11 of those are actually taking place here in Kildare, Clem, which is absolutely brilliant. And the expectation is that this year will be the biggest goal mile because we have AIB on board to support now.
Now, Celine, that's good news. First of all, just tell me, remind listeners again about the work that GOAL does worldwide.
Worldwide, basically, GOAL, the work GOAL do is they support the work they do in emergency response and sustainable development with some of the most vulnerable communities in 14 countries throughout the world. Last year, GOAL supported over 14 million people in Africa, the Middle East, and in Latin America. And last year, our goal miles were all virtual due to COVID. But this year, the plan is that we will run actual events across the country. And obviously, the option will still be there to run a virtual goal mile as well.
I got a call from a gentleman in Newbridge this morning. I think it was Robert Healy. And he said that he and his wife is not well. And he's quite elderly himself. And there's nothing wrong with being elderly, by the way. But they have a Filipino woman who comes in to do some taking care of them. And apparently, her entire home of her family and her relations in the Philippines was destroyed in the recent typhoons. Does GOAL operate in countries like the Philippines?
Yes, and the one thing about GOAL, they're absolutely amazing. They're usually first on site to help with disasters like that. And what they can do for these countries is just second to none, and they just get stuck in there. And that's why the likes of the GOAL Mile is so important. The charity, the money that this brings in is detrimental to GOAL and the work that they carry out.
Because he was asking, was there any charity that could help this woman and whatever else? But I explained to him this morning that GOAL would probably be on the scene already, along with government sources. It's a terrible time. People see their lives wiped out in front of them. I know we've a lot of problems here, but when you put it in perspective and you look at the disasters, the natural disasters that have around the world that have left people with nothing.
Absolutely.
You know, we're not that badly off at all. Now, your goal mile in Alamwood is starting, is on which day?
Ours is on St. Stephen's Day. We will be at Alamwood Cross from 10 a.m. to 12 midday. The plan is on the day. Well, this is our third one, as I said. First year was a huge success. Last year, we had to run it virtually. Now, it was a success, but obviously the community spirit element was missing. So this year, we're back to the virtual event. So 10 to 12 at Alamwood Cross, and we're going to have a kind of a fun element at 11 a.m. We're going to actually have a race. We have pop-up supporting us, and we also have Spar supporting us on the day. And we will have a clock there. We have the likes of Johnny Doyle, as usual.
Johnny's far too old for that old kind of stuff, you know. I mean, the old knees might be at him or whatever, you know, and he has enough in his hands now with twins and everything else. Would you remind us about just basically maybe list out the other venues in Kildare where goal miles are being held, if you have them?
I don't have them, Ken, but I know they're definitely on in Clane, Johnstown Bridge, Nace, outside of that. I'm not sure. Ballymore. I'm not sure outside of that. I don't have the list.
All right, okay.
But if people want to find out, they can log on to goalmile.org and you'll find out where your nearest goal mile is taking place, either on Christmas Day or St. Stephen's Day.
Okay, lovely. On that note then, Celine Cronley, wherever your goal mile, and if any other groups out there are organising goal miles, they can get in touch with us in our WhatsApp or text. 0833 97 97 97, email studio at kfmradio.com, or you can call us on 045 898 999, and we'll be glad to share it with listeners. Just a little message here. Well done to Mickey Dowling, who won the World Handball Championship. It comes from all at Ballymore Handball Club. Ballymore Handball Club has a great, great tradition, by the way. Okay, I'm going to bring you John McKenna's song, not his song, his story about Christmas time in a couple of minutes' time. But first, let's go to the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District and Kira Galvin. Good morning, Kira.
Morning, Clem.
Labour councillor, and you had two motions to the recent meeting. You wanted the council dish the footpath cycle path. I don't know what that misprint is, but on the order sheet, so the cyclists can, well, anyway, what was that motion about?
So up at the roundabout by the Hazelhatch train station, there's a cycle path, but there's no way for people who are cycling to actually get up onto that path once they've gone off the roundabout. So I've just asked for an access point, really. So dishing it would mean dipping the curb down to the road.
Oh, right. Okay, so it wasn't a typo then. It's an actual dish.
No, it is. It's a term they use, yeah. No, I looked for it last year and it wasn't done. So I put in a motion on it this month and they said they would do it after Christmas. So I'm looking forward to seeing that done.
All right, dishing. That's a new word to my lexicon. Thank you. The council, you want them to grit cycle lanes and footpaths. It might be a good idea because it can be lethal. Thankfully, we're nice and mild at the moment. Are they going to?
No. Well, they might if it's very extreme weather and they have the resources. As you said, it's been quite mild at the moment. But essentially what they said was they don't have the budget for it this year.
Hold on a minute, Kira. There are no plans, I'm seeing in this answer, to treat footpaths or cycle lanes.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
But that's ridiculous.
It is. It is a bit daft. They did say when I questioned them on it at the meeting, they said that this is an increasingly common request and that they will, although they don't have the budget or the resources for this year, that they will look at it in 2022. It may actually require councillors allocating additional budget to that area of the council in our budget deliberations in autumn next year. So anyway, look, I'll keep it on the agenda, and if it's really bad, I'll ask them again to do it on a case-by-case basis.
But I mean, the fact of the matter is, footpaths can be lethal, and cycle lanes, if you're on a bike in icy conditions, I would have taken it that if you're icing roads, I would have always assumed that the footpaths, and particularly cycle lanes and those as well, would get an old spray of the de-icer. But I'm surprised to find it isn't.
No, and I was a bit surprised as well when I realised it last year. To be honest, Clem, I probably should have raised it before December, do you know, that way. But, look, we'll keep it on the agenda for next year, anyway.
All right. Kira, good talking to you in 2021. We look forward to chatting with you again in 2022.
You too, Clem. Happy Christmas, and I hope you have a great new year.
And you too, and your family as well. That's Kira Galvin, Labour Councillor on the Selbridge-Leixlip Municipal District. Request, Mary Cooney says, could you wish my sister Nolene Wallace a happy birthday? She got her bus pass yesterday. That's the second bus pass she got. Happy Christmas to one and all, because we heard about it early as well. I don't mean that she's double. Trish Proctor, who's been a great contributor to us from Castle Dermot with her poems over the last couple of years, says, a little message has been sent your way to say enjoy your Christmas day. To each of you, and by wonder too, good health and happiness the whole year through. Thank you for your service. You make us mad, but then you make a smile. Happy Christmas from Trish Proctor. Lovely, Trish. Love that. Gormila Mahagut. Hi, Kieran, Clem. Apologies about the line there. Have a safe and wonderful Christmas and a happy new year. Speak with you in 2022. That's Vera Louise. Yes, Vera Louise, we didn't want to do you an injustice by having a line that was crackling up, you know, not exactly working out too good. Anyway, lads, we've been playing this new CD, double CD, issued by John McKenna, the great playwright, author, broadcaster, you name it, man of many, many talents. It's called I Knew This Place, radio essays from his RT1 Sunday Miscellany programme that he contributes for so, so many years. John lectures as well in English at MU Maynooth, as well as being a prolific writer, author, poet, man of so many talents. Many people loved the story of Mick Carolan and John's boyhood hero. But also, I think you like this story. Given the season that we're in it, it's the story called A Christmas Thief. The story of a number of different men, and I suppose the underlying theme being isolation, particularly poignant at this time of year.
Christmas Thief. Writers are thieves. We steal stories, ideas, phrases, characters, whatever we can lay our hands on, and we do it at the drop of a hat. And we steal all the time, even at Christmas. What I'm about to tell you is really the story of five men. The thief, his two friends, the man who lived on the roadside, and the man in the London flat. It was across a Christmas table that I first heard the story of the old man who lived on the roadside, and it came from my neighbour, Paul Donoghue. He mentioned that the old man had lived in a caravan on the outskirts of a nearby town. The caravan had been the old man's home for a long, long time. So long that he had cut back the ditch around it, dug and sown a vegetable patch, cleared and planted flower beds, and made a lawn. The caravan and its garden were as well kept as any of the manicured gardens in the nearby estates. The man who lived on the roadside left people alone, went his own way and lived his patient, quiet life. And, for the most part, people allowed him his peace. On a particularly bright and calm Christmas morning, a neighbour was making his way to Mass, and as he approached the caravan, he heard a low, whirring sound. Drawing closer, he saw the old man steadily walking up and down, pushing an outdated manual lawnmower, cutting the small patch of grass that bordered the vegetable garden. The men exchanged greetings and talked about the mildness of the day. "It's unusual to see someone out cutting the grass on a Christmas morning," the neighbour said. The old man looked him in the eye. "Is it Christmas Day?" he asked. I didn't know it was Christmas Day." The second story was told to me by my friend Tom Hunt, and again it was told across a kitchen table at Christmas time. It was the story of Tom's father and uncle, who had worked on their father's farm. On his death, the farm was left to Tom's father, the eldest son. He assured his brother that he was welcome to stay on the land, that they would work side by side, but the younger man wouldn't hear of it and took the boat to England. Like so many before him, he found employment on building sites. And each Christmas, Tom's mother would send a card to her brother-in-law, wishing him peace and the joys of the season. 38 years after he left home, the word came that he had died, Tom told me. I was sent over to London to make the funeral arrangements and to clear out his flat. It was a single bedsit with one narrow bed, one chair, one table, one of everything. And under the bed I found the old cardboard suitcase he'd brought with him when he left home as a young man. And inside it were the 38 Christmas cards my mother had sent him over the years. Nothing else, just the Christmas cards. I am a thief, but sometimes a tale is too precious to steal. I listened to the stories told me by Paul and Tom over the same Christmas table as it happens. And I knew I could never do anything with them beyond retelling the isolation of the lives of the old man on the roadside and the man in the tiny London bedsit. Sometimes that's all there is to do. Sometimes you sit back and let the shiver of sadness run down your spine, the recognition of the roads and boats you might have taken. Sometimes you breathe in the blessings that are yours, gratefully accepting the happier share. So, tonight, I think of the thief and his two friends sitting at a well-laden table in a warm kitchen, the lights from the Christmas tree falling across their faces. And I think, too, of the old men in their isolation and the strange appropriateness of their stories at Christmas time. For are we not celebrating the birth of a baby boy whose existence was one of wandering and of homelessness, and whose life ended in the most abject and isolated of circumstances? But if we believe what we're told, there was more to his story than that. And my wish is that when Paul and myself sit across a Christmas table in the glow of this year's seasonal lights, we will raise a silent salute to the memory of the old man in the roadside caravan, the man in the small London flat, and to our absent friend Tom Hunt, and wish them a happy and peaceful Christmas together in the brighter lights of eternity.
Incredibly evocative, isn't it? That's John McKenna. I knew this place some 28 tracks. Best value album you can get for Christmas and would make a wonderful present for somebody. I can guarantee you that much. And if you want to find out how to get it, you can go on to his website, theharvestpress.ie, where you can purchase that CD or indeed some of the books that have been published, including The Forgotten by Gerard Whelan, the stories of those men from Castle Dermot who died in World War One. But that CD, I knew this place. Quite amazing and remarkable stuff, I have to say, and so evocative. But we don't want to leave you on a downer, so let's hear from the Brideys.
I wonder, did you know, there's a lovely place to go where the weather is a mix of rain and rain. We love our GAA and our frequent cup of tea and digging holes just to fill them in again. And there's nothing like a nice dish of ham, butter biscuits, noodles, say, potato, cheese and onion. The smell of fresh silage or the big feed of spuds or a good thickened reed of Ireland's own. And there's nothing like a nice bit of ham, butter biscuits, lucose, potato, cheese and onion. The smell of fresh silage or the big feed of spuds or a good feckin' reed of Ireland's own.
By the Brideys, and there's nothing like a bit of ham or a feed of spuds or the smell of silage. I think they're wonderful lyrics altogether.